Good morning, and welcome to this installment of the IMGD Speaker Series. I'm Rob Lindemann's good twin, because I don't have a goatee. We're very happy today to have Brian Sullivan come and talk to us about level design. Brian is a co-founder of both Iron Lore Entertainment and Ensemble Studios. Brian is the creator, co-creator of Titan Quest and Age of Empires series of games. Both these franchises have been very well critically received, with Age of Empires winning Best Game of the Year awards. In 1998, Brian won the Computer Game Developers Association Spotlight Award for Achievement in Game Design for his work on Age of Empires. Brian has worked on 8 games with a total sales of over 20 million copies. So please join me in welcoming Brian Sullivan.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be talking to you all today. We're going to talk about virtual world creation, also known as level design. Hopefully you'll find this, I think this is a lot more interesting than a lot of people probably would expect. But I don't have to go through my background. So I think the word level design came from the days of the early shooter games, like Wolfenstein 3D and Doom 1. In those games, the game world was actually made up of physical levels. There were these large rectangular spaces broken up into around 20 rooms and hallways. And the gameplay was you would fight a bunch of monsters, you'd find the boss monster, kill him, you'd get a key, which would allow you to go to the next level. And each level was this big rectangular place with a bunch of rooms and hallways and a boss monster and a key. And you do that for 10 or 20 levels, and the game was over. So those early games, Wolfenstein 3D and Doom, did have level editors. They were really crude, but you could create levels with those games. So I think level editor kind of came from that era. But of course, games nowadays, you know, we have incredibly powerful, I might not use those words 10 years from now, but now they seem like incredibly powerful computers and consoles. And even the handhelds are getting pretty powerful nowadays. You can do a lot of interesting things on a lot of the handheld devices. So I tend to think that level design doesn't really describe what level designers do in the industry. They're really creating virtual worlds. When you look at a lot of the game environments and a lot of current games, they are very close to what you would think of for a virtual world. So I couldn't find any graphics from the Doom or Wolfenstein 3D era. This graphic actually comes from Fallout 3, believe it or not. But this is somewhat similar to the older era games where they were just a bunch of rectangles and hallways. It almost looked like somebody drew some lines on paper and you just extruded it straight up for 10 or 15 feet. This is a lot more advanced than what they had in the old days. All these objects in the rooms they didn't have in the old games, all these pieces attached to the walls they didn't have either. They just basically had flat walls, doorways, and really pixelated textures on everything. So creating a level like this, not this one with all the detail, but back in the old days, did not take a lot of expertise, and it was a minor part about creating games. So creating this is not very hard. If you look at a modern game, this happens to be a very truncated scene from Titan Quest. Creating this type of environment and creating 40 hours of this type of environment, 40 hours of gameplay of this type of environment, where there's a lot of detail in the world, there's a lot of objects, there's a lot of animated things going on in the world, not counting the player, takes an awful lot of time to do. And there's a lot of aesthetic and artistic ability in creating levels like this. So instead of saying, what is the game level, I'm going to say what is the game world, because I think we're really creating these virtual worlds. You're really creating the immersive environment of the game. So when people play a game and they play that game for 20 hours, 40 hours, 100 hours. They're spending that all in the game world that the level designers create. And like I say, with the current hardware, most games, these are holodeck type of worlds that you access through your computer monitor or your TV screen. They have a lot of the details that the real world has. There's a lot of movement in these. The water moves. You have the frogs and the butterflies moving. The vegetation sways with the wind and reacts to with the player and the monsters and everything else. So there's an awful lot going on in these worlds. So you're creating this great immersive environment. As I mentioned a little earlier, you're playing what the player sees 99% of the time, except for a little bit of UI that's on the screen and a few gameplay-related things like the character and the monsters. Everything else they see is created by the level designer. So, you know, most of what they see all the time they're playing the game is what the level designer creates. And the worlds that the level designer creates is really the structure that ties together everything else in the game. So even though there might be a lot of interesting artwork or sound or music tracks or technology, it's not very useful to the player until it's all brought together in a meaningful way. And that's really what the level designer does, is he brings together all these other assets and technology into a usable game space. Level designers really should be familiar with pretty much all these disciplines, because the level designer interacts with all the other creators of those objects, the technology, the music, the sound, the art, and in generally very sophisticated ways. So a level designer should know a little bit about all those different pieces of the game and how they're created and how they're used. But in addition to just bringing things together, a level designer really creates a masterpiece. You know, levels nowadays, in all their complexity, are pieces of art. And I mean that in the highest sense of the word, where they're created by artists, people who are talented with an aesthetic or artistic ability to create some really awesome-looking things. You know, when at Iron Lore, when we were looking for level designers, Titan Quest, even in the early stages, had a very powerful editor. And it required a lot of blending of textures and painting the textures around. It was a full 3D game. Most RPGs were not 3D at that time, so you could create chasms and rolling hills and all these things that you couldn't really do in previous role-playing games. And to do this, we found out that most people can't create compelling levels with a tool like that. What ended up happening, people can place trees and put bumps and, you know, draw pathways on the ground, but it would look like a sort of gamey artificial park and not a real wilderness. And it took a special talent for people to actually put all these things together in a way that looked compelling and realistic. And, you know, the first 10 people in our company, we had nobody who can do it. You know, none of us could really put it all together. So when we were looking for level designers, we actually subjected them to an all-day affair when they came in for an interview. They would go through the usual interviews and everything else in the morning, but after lunch, we'd sit them down at the computer with the Titan Quest editing tool and had them create a level. We gave them the next 6 or 7 hours to create a level. So we give them a little instruction on how to use the tool and the type of level we wanted them to create, and we just let them go at it. And it's amazing the difference in quality between the different levels of all the candidates. You know, some were really stunningly great looking, and those are the ones we hired. Most of them were absolute trash. Now the problem is, you know, potential level designers didn't really have a portfolio. And even if they had created levels in other RPGs at the time, like Neverwinter Nights or Dungeon Siege, those tools were still kind of crude and didn't really allow for a lot of artistic expression. Neverwinter Nights and Dungeon Siege were both tile-based systems, so you're basically just connecting a bunch of tiles. So there's not a whole lot of artistic expression in how you create the world. With Titan Quest, we had a mesh and tile system, but a lot of it was a mesh, so you're actually sort of terraforming the world and being very interactive and subtle with how you use the world. We also had a very sophisticated texture blending system, so you were, you know, using a handful of base textures, you were blending them in ways to create all the interesting textures in the world. And it took a lot of talent to do that. And I think as we move forward in the game industry, level designers, will take an increasingly more important role in creating games. And I'm going to try highlighting a lot of the issues that level designers come across when creating these type of worlds. And finally, you know, what is the game world? I think this is really where the rubber meets the road. I think this, level creation is really where the magic of the game is made. You have all these assets and things just sitting around. There's no magic there. It's when they're brought together in a very artistic and functional way that you create the magic in a game. So I tend to think that the level designers are the guys who create a lot of the magic in the game. So I just grabbed some screenshots of some recent games just to give an idea of the types of worlds people create. So the next couple are from Titan Quest, but even in this really small piece of a level, you can see, well, it's a little hard to see probably on this screen, but the level designer decided to use two different types of reeds in the game. There's this lighter color reed here and the darker reeds here. There's a piece of mud sticking through the reed here. There's a channel here between the reeds. Things like having these reed boats and having I don't know what they're called, a reed collector in there, gathering reeds. This isn't the gameplay designer. This isn't really the artist. It's the level designer who's deciding that, hey, I need this to make a good-looking, realistic level. The fact that, you need a dock for these reed boats, that there's piles of reeds on the shores of the dock. They have to think through what's going on in this world and think about the details that make it real. And this happens to be based on sort of a historical topic, but it doesn't matter. If you're working in a fantasy world or Star Wars, you really have to know your Star Wars universe so you can put in all those details that makes it real. Here's another scene from Titan Quest. Now, the level designer, put a couple of merchants on the outside of this fortified city down in Egypt. Now, it makes sense probably that these merchants are, their buildings are just tents and not something a little more permanent. Because usually when things are outside the city, if the city's being attacked, everybody's got to run inside, so you're not going to build some structure out here that can get destroyed. And I'm sure there's, every time a new ruler gets in charge of the city, they probably want to clean things up a little, and they probably kick out all the merchants until they decide that they need the merchants for the economy, and then let them back in. This has a stone pier here. Well, if you do some research, there's not that many big trees, timbers in Egypt, so they made things out of stone. They didn't make them out of wood like the Northern Europeans did. And there's just a lot of those details. You have to do a lot of research, but it takes a long time to place every one of those little pieces in the level and make them work for the gameplay and make them work, in all the other different ways. We're going to talk about a lot of the constraints for creating levels. Here's another scene from the expansion to Titan Quest. They wanted to create a overgrown ruined of a city. So the level designer had to spend a lot of time working with the artist saying, okay, we need a lot of this vegetation that would overgrow the city. We have these vines connecting trees. Originally with Titan Quest, you couldn't put vines between trees. You can place trees. There was no way to connect them with something like a vine. So the level designer had to work with the tech people, say, hey, I need to put vines. You need to create that capability. And then the artist had to create the trees with attach points so you can attach the vines to them. And then somebody had to update the editor so that the level designer can actually grab a vine and attach it to the trees. So there's a lot of this type of interaction going on with the other groups in the game development team. And the level designer all the time. here's World of Warcraft. Somebody, you know, had to create these big levels. World of Warcraft is a very sparse world. In some ways, you might think it's an easier world to create because there's less things to put down. But then again, I think a lot of the art direction in World of Warcraft is so fantastic, and the level design is actually, it's very subtle, but it's a very high level where with just a handful of objects and really overstretched textures, they're able to create a very compelling game space. And I noticed they use, you know, some little techniques. You know, in a lot of games, when you put a tree into the ground or a post, it creates this very artificial, straight, sharp line, like you sort of see here. So one of the little tricks you do as a level designer is you put tufts of grass and other vegetation to hide those artificial seams. And as you run around in a lot of games, you'll see a lot of these little techniques where people are using these tricks to kind of make things seem more real. Something I'm going to talk about later is money shots. You want to get money shots in a lot of your levels. And by money shots, I mean some compelling area where when the player gets there, they're going to go, oh, wow, this is really cool. It's a great scene to take a screenshot for marketing purposes. So here, I think this is a sort of subtle money shot from World of Warcraft. You know, you have this chasm here. You have these, you know, three waterfalls on the other side. You have this neat-looking park-like forest on the other side with some mist coming up in the forest. You can see the outlines of a mountain in the background. You know, it's a very compelling scene. And if you play World of Warcraft, a lot of times the day-night cycle changes, and sometimes you'll get here and you'll see a big moon on the horizon, you know, behind the forest. And, you know, it creates a lot of these really, really nice scenes. But somebody has to create all these worlds. They have to conceive of these worlds. They have to conceive, let's have a chasm here, and let's have these waterfalls and this park-like forest. And then somebody's got to execute and create all that and work with the art people and the tech people to make it happen. This is from Half-Life 2. Now, this happens, I think this is a marketing scene. I don't think as a player you can actually get into this position where you can see the world like this. But somebody had to create this world. They had to conceive of all the buildings they'd need and the terrain, and they had to mold the terrain in this way where you had this little water inlet and this town on the far side and this, I don't know, church-type building on this side. And you can actually go run around in the game in the church-type building. And, you know, and it takes a lot of work to create these virtual worlds. Here's another scene from Half-Life 2. You know, somebody had to think about all these things. You know, one thing I was thinking about when I was looking at this screenshot is why do we have all these sort of electrical wires all over the place? Now, certainly if you didn't have the wires, you'd be able to see the buildings and the other artwork a lot nicer. But I think they were trying to create this sort of dystopian society. And somehow I think having all these kind of strange, old-school kind of wires hanging around really helped create that atmosphere that they were trying to create. And somebody who created these levels had to take that into account and think, well, I need something like that to create the kind of mood I want in my levels. This is a scene from Halo Wars, an upcoming game from Ensemble Studios. Now, you know, this is an RTS game. RTS has different constraints on how they develop their levels. One of the big problems with RTS levels is pathing. You know, if you have eight people playing a game and they each have 50 units that are all pathing all over the place, you know, you're going to bring your computer to its knees. So you have to create the levels in a way that it makes it easy for the pathing algorithms to run. So you can't have very tight choke points where units are going to all pile up and have a hard time figuring out how to get through them. You can't have, ideally, you have no choke points in the game to make it easy. So if you look at this gap in the sort of walls back here, they had to make that nice and wide. So I don't think you can see it a little bit. There's a little army coming down through this gap. A lot of these modern RTSs also have pretty big vehicles. So you have to make all the paths and channels in the map big enough so that you can have a couple of these vehicles go through without causing pathing to, you know, fail. But you still have to do it in a way that it looks beautiful and is compelling, and, you know, I think they're doing a good job here. This is, I think this is from Halo 3. And, you know, now this is a very unique thing, you know, having this base built in, onto the inside of this huge boulder or cliff or whatever it is. But somebody had to conceive that would be a great thing for this game. And, you know, that we're going to have this spaceport right outside of it. And this is all playable area where you can go in and run around and everything else. And maybe it's built into this thing to protect itself from enemy missiles or something. But somebody had to conceive all this. And then they had to work with the art people and the tech people to figure out how we're going to make this. You know, is this a one-off type of building where the whole thing was built in one huge 3D Studio Max file? Or was there some kind of editing tool where they pieced together this kind of mountain complex? So there's a lot of these very detailed, very immersive worlds. There's a lot of different types of worlds. There's a difference between all the different genres. They're different even within the genres. And somebody's got to create all these virtual worlds. And that's the job, the main job of the level designer. And I think as the computing power has gotten more powerful, the role of level designers has become much more important to just creating the game, but also creating the fun and the awesome parts of the game. Now, here's GTA 4. In the old days, this would just be a bunch of generic buildings with roads between them. But here they have this suspension bridge. You know, they have this sort of seedy city theme. So there's lots of these little pawn shops and all this kind of stuff all over. It's all these kind of details that make the world very immersive. And they had to do a lot of research. I'm sure they spent some time going to the seedier parts of Glasgow or New York City and taking lots of stock photos and, to help them create the really immersive world they're looking for. So I'm going to talk quickly about what do world creators or level designers do. So on one level, they implement the story and topic and the gameplay. So when level designers start a project, you already know the topic. The topic's usually determined when the contract is greenlit. You know, it's going to be a Star Wars project, or it's going to take place in Tolkien, or it's going to be ancient Greece. That's already fixed. Ideally, the story or enough of the story is developed so that the level designers know where specifically in this world or universe that things are going to, the action is going to take place. And they'll know, ideally, they'll know enough about the gameplay so that they can build their levels to accommodate the gameplay. And I'm going to talk about a lot of those things more later on. That's ideal. I use the word ideally a lot because it doesn't always work that way. You know, in Titan Quest 1, we actually used a Hollywood writer on the game. And it actually took us several months before we were actually able to finalize the contract with the writer. And then it took a long time to bring him up to speed on our type of game and what kind of story we're looking for. And then he spent months and months writing it, and it wasn't at all what we were looking for, and we had to do iterations. And by the time we got some usable story, it was way over a year. It was close to a year and a half after we had started development. Well, we couldn't wait that long to create the levels. So we actually created levels based on our best guess of what was going to happen in the story. And what we had to do is we had to retrofit the story to fit the levels because we had already created the levels and we couldn't really change them to fit the story. You'll see when I talk later about story things that probably is not the ideal way to do things. And it definitely isn't. Research. This word's going to come up a lot. Oh boy, I'm going to have to go a lot quicker. This word's going to come up a lot in the talk because a large part of what level designers do is a lot of research. If you know that the topic is ancient Greece or you know the topic is Star Wars, you have to be an expert at that topic to be able to create the kind of immersive and awesome levels you want to create. You know, on Titan Quest, we bought $1,500 worth of books and DVDs on the ancient world. So, we bought all these Hercules movies and Jason and the Argonaut movie, all this crap. And we had a lot of movie nights where everybody's sitting around watching these crappy old movies just to get inspiration for what we'd want to do. Because they usually put some cool things in the movies and we wanted to steal some of those to put them in our games. We also had lots of source books covering the ancient world. We had things like you know, the fauna of Greece, you know, or the flowers of the Mediterranean, or we had some topographical maps from the ancient world. You know, all these really boring things, but...
Did you have an academic consultant to check this out?
No, we didn't. I mean, that's something we always had intended to do, but we never did. We tend to do what we call Hollywood history, not actual history. What's important is it seems like what we're trying to do, not that it's real. You know, the example I give is if we did a Viking game, the Vikings would have big horns on their helmet because that's what you see in the movies, regardless of the fact that real Vikings never had those big horns. You know, we would do whatever people kind of half expected. You know, part of this research is, you know, when we have all these source materials, you know, the level designers sometimes will spend 2, 3, 4 days a week straight just scanning in pictures from books to get all the images that they thought were important electronically so they can share them with the artists and other people and use this as source people. I'll talk about research later on in the talk, and actually Crisis has put out some very nice example graphics to really highlight the research. But I'm going to have to I have a lot to cover, and I'm going to have to speed up a lot to get this all done. So design the world. So after you know the type of world, okay, it's a Star Wars game, you're going to go to these 5 planets, you know, you're going to fight people on all the planets, at the end you're going to save the universe. You know, once you start with that, you do the research, you now you know all of it, you've gotten that Star Wars Bible, you've done all the research, you know exactly what the buildings look like, the trees look like, the ground, the landscape, everything. So you've done all your research, you got the source material. Now you have to design the world. A lot of times this is done with pencil and paper or some sort of electronic art program. But it's to a large degree, it's a big sketches of the world, and you want to lay out what buildings, what type of terrain, things like that, where the gameplay spaces are, where the safe spaces, where the merchants go, all this type of stuff. You want to do as much of this as possible. The way it usually works is when the level designers can't usually create levels right away because the art or the tech is not ready for them. If you're using a license engine, you'll have the tech quicker, but you still won't have the art. So you can't just run out there usually and start creating levels. So level designers have to what I call do their homework, do their research, do their planning as much as possible in the early, so when the tech and art becomes available, they can hit the ground running, because they're going to be, you know, very short on time during the project, and they got to be very efficient. Now you've envisioned the kind of world you're going to create. Now you have to define the art and the tools and technology you need to create that. So if you're creating a desert planet, or you're creating, you know, a planet with Mayan ruins, you have to identify what ruins you need, what buildings you need, what trees, what rocks, what grass, what kind of ground textures, what kind of butterflies. You have to define everything. You're going to be creating lists of art needs that are, you know, 100 Excel pages long. I mean, these are a lot of stuff you're going to be creating. And, you know, you're going to be spending a lot of time, you're going to spend a lot of time negotiating with the art director and the tech director as to how much of this art you can get or technology you can get. You also do a lot on sounds. You know, you have a waterfall in the game, well, you need waterfall sounds. You have, you know, frogs in the game, you need frog sounds. You're going to be creating huge lists of sounds. You're going to be talking to the audio guys and say, hey, I need all these sounds. What usually happens is they always come back and say, you know, you can't have anywhere near that much, and, you know, it gets messy. And then, okay, you've designed the world, you've gotten your art and your tools and your technology, now you basically have to build the world. And usually you build the world in stages, because there's a lot of, you have to make sure the world works for a lot of different people and a lot of different audiences. So prototyping a crude mock-up first, making sure that the size is right, walking across the world takes the right amount of time, making sure the important gameplay and story points are accessible. Then you actually move on to building the real levels. You have to spend a lot of time testing the levels, and we're going to go over all these things more in detail. Debugging levels, there's a lot of gameplay bugs and technical bugs that you'll have to find, and a lot of polishing. The problem with making your great level is there's lots of constraints on level designers. Most of the things in the left column I'm going to go into more detail, so I won't talk about now. I'll just say a few things on the right column. You know, art direction, certainly if you're doing a cartoony world, you'll have very different asset needs and design parameters than if you're doing a photorealistic type of world. Time, by time I mean schedule. You're going to run out of time. You're going to severely run out of time when you're creating these worlds. You know, one of the things level designers like to do is just polish, 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 and keep making them look more awesome. And you generally probably will have no time for polish, but you'll run out of time. Productivity is incredibly important in developing these levels. That's why tool development is so important, because you want to make your job as productive as possible, the time you spend as productive as possible. And imagination, this might not sound like a constraint, but it's actually amazing how constrained people are in their imagination when they're creating things. So, and this isn't just for level design, but in this case we're talking about level design. You know, level designers will get there and they'll kind of go through, they'll be putting trees and making hills and doing things. And what happens is they have the same kind of level everywhere. And you really want them to go outside the box sometimes and create something that's stunning, that's amazing. You know, so we, you know, at Iron Lore, you know, I started instituting a policy where I wanted every level, and each level is about 1 to 2 hours of gameplay, every level had to have a money shot. So, you know, when they designed the level, they had to circle a place and go, this is my money shot, this is that awesome chasm, this is that awesome little village with all the detail, this is, you know, the lava field or whatever. Whatever was their money shot, they had to plan that in. It had to be a central part of what they were doing. And actually, you know, once we got into that mode of thinking, our level designers really liked that, because that was their little, you know, they invented that money shot and they created it, and, you know, it became a really fun part of the levels for them. But it was amazing how easy it was. You think people would be going outside the box everywhere, but instead I think they got caught into a trap where they were just trying to make things realistic, and most realistic things just aren't that awesome. You know, you really have to get inspired. You have to see the Grand Canyon or something like that to get inspired to create something like that. Okay, so story and topic. You know, the topic defines the setting. As I said earlier, you know, you have to be an expert in your topic to be able to create a virtual world in that topic. And, you know, research is critically important to this. So you got to spend a lot of time doing the research. Story, the what, why, where, when, you know, the story really provides the context of what you're doing minute by minute in the game. You know, one of the things that story does is it defines story points in the level. So a lot of story is communicated through NPCs. So when you have this big hulking story, it's usually broken up by lots of NPCs giving you pieces of the story. So you have to make sure that the player is naturally guided to all these NPCs so they can talk to the NPCs. Quests and quest goals are another important part of the story and have to be built into the level. If you have to kill some monster, you have to be able to find the monster. You have to be able to go there, kill it, come back to the quest giver. You know, there's lots of these constraints on how you build your level. Scripted events, you know, if there's going to be a landslide when you come around, you know, the side of a mountain, you know, that's another thing you have to build into the level. If you're creating a shooter and you go down, you go around a corner and you're chasing somebody and you see a door slam at the end of the corridor, you go down there, you open up the door and you run in and you see another door slam, and as you're following your antagonist, you know, these scripted events have to be built into the level. They have to be planned and built in. So you have to take the story and all the constraints that the story has and plan those when you build your level. Status, you know, if you come to a village, you know, has the bad guy been there? Have they trashed the village, or have they not gotten there yet? You know, the status of what's going on in the world. You know, quests, I don't have time to go into this, but there's a lot of game states tied to quests. Even a small number of quests creates a huge complex web of I've gotten this quest, but I haven't solved this quest. I've gotten this quest and have solved it, and I skipped this quest. And, you know, it's very complex. So the status of what's going on in the world all has to be taken into account when creating these levels. Defining art requirements. Again, I mentioned the research. You know, critically important. If the artists are given really good reference material, they can create awesome art, and they'll create it quick. If you can't communicate or give them good reference material, they'll flounder. They'll create stuff you don't want, or it'll be lower quality. And I have some examples of awesome reference material and the execution in Crisis right after this. After you've done the research and you got the reference material, you have to design the levels. And I'm going through a lot of the constraints. There's a lot of gameplay constraints, story constraints, real-world constraints, topic constraints when you're making these levels. You have to take those all into account when you're laying out the levels. And we'll go over some more of those, especially when we get to the gameplay constraints. But they all have to be taken into account. And then once you've designed the levels, you've got to figure out what art you need to create the levels. And usually, you have to sit down and look at your paper, drawings of levels, and you've got to think about every piece of everything that's in there to create that awesome thing. You know, if you're creating a house and somebody can enter the house, what kind of furniture do you need? What kind of drapes do you need? What is there carpet on the floor? What about the lighting, in the kitchen? Are there plates, utensils, a refrigerator? What kind of appliances? You have to think about all those things, and you have to write down a list. I need a fridge. I need a this. I need a table. I need candles, And then you go to you negotiate with the art director about how much of that stuff you can get. And, what usually happens is the art director says, we can't even create a fraction of what you want. So you have to spend a lot of time, I call cheating, I can't create 47 unique buildings for you to populate this village. I can give you 6 buildings. And you're going to have to, you cheat. You change the rotation. Maybe you can get the art guys to retexture 3 or 4 of the buildings with different textures. So it's the same building, but it looks different because they have different textures, something they can do kind of quick. You have to have them make the buildings modular so you can put the pieces together and create a sort of unlimited number of buildings that are unique. You have to do all these little cheat techniques to get as much mileage out of the few resources you can get as possible. And then you constantly, as you're building your levels, the people play testing your levels, you constantly have to revise the art needs because it changes a lot. I think this is a totally different discussion, but the best way to create any game is through a lot of iteration. The first time you build a game, it's usually not fun. It's only through iteration that you create the fun and awesomeness. So things change a lot during the development. So this is Crysis. If you look at the top photo, that's this building in-game. The middle photo is a photograph, and the bottom photo is a concept of a frozen version of this building. But, when you look at the real-life photograph and the implementation, runtime implementation in Crysis, it's really hard to tell them apart. Same thing here. On the left is the photograph. On the right is the same scene in Crysis. And it's really hard to tell which is which.
Yeah. What the heck is up with that thing?
Yeah, it's so artificial. You look at that valley, it looks like something out of Hawaii or something. But, the photographs are on the left and the game's on the right. Now, the thing is, with good source material and good direction, the artist can do amazing things, but they need a lot of direction. Artists really have a hard time creating things out of nothing. You'd think the artists would be good at that, but most artists in the game industry, I think, are more technical artists. They know how to use tools and create things. They're not so good at imagining things. And if they do imagine things, they'll imagine it different than what you want. So here's another one. Photo on the left, it's actual implementation in Crysis. I'll tell you, we're getting to the point where we are truly creating virtual worlds. They're as detailed and complex as the real world in some ways, but they're virtual and in the game. And these things have to be created quick and fast and dirty. Just a couple of years, you've got to create a huge number of hours of gameplay like this. And here's one last one, the photo on the top. So good reference, a lot of good research and reference material is critically important. This is just one of the maps from Warcraft. This isn't anywhere near detailed enough for designing a level. Now, if every named area of this had another detailed thing, which kind of showed, all the buildings, you're getting somewhere on the design. We're going to have to go through. I mentioned if it's a creative new thing, you might need concept material. So tools and technology, I'm going to go through this quick. Basically, better tools make for better levels, higher productivity, and happier designers. The important thing here is the higher productivity. In big budget game development now, the budgets are getting so phenomenally outrageous, nobody can make money on a lot of the big budget games anymore. So I really think the successful developers in the future will be the ones that have high productivity. So you really have to spend a lot of time making better tools. You need to define the tech tools and UI you need to create those great virtual worlds you envisioned. And here's some quick examples of, you know, usually most games have a big honkin' editor, which have a lot of different components all built into it. You need a lot of these things to help you do your job better. And we're a little short on time, and I want to save some time for questions, so I'm just going to go through quick. I was going to show you some examples of the Titan Quest editor, because it's very interesting to see how levels are built with that product. I don't have time to do that now, but these, if you Google, you know, Titan Quest editor tutorial, you'll find these on the internet, and you can take a look at them there.
I can post those, too, if you want to.
Okay, I can do that. Gameplay issues. Again, we're talking about constraints on making your awesome level. You know, pacing is an important part to make the level fun. You can't have people going out, you know, balls to the wall, intense gameplay all the time. They need some downtime. They need some time to gloat over their loot. So you have to create the world so you have the downtime mixed in just the right proportions with the more intense parts. Enemies and bosses, you know, again, it's constraints in the levels. You know, with Titan Quest, we basically said each level had to have one big boss. Each level also had to have three mini bosses. You know, you have to come out with this kind of rules of thumbs and those kind of directives from the gameplay side to make the game fun. And you have to build those into levels. You have to think about where the boss is, where the mini bosses are. Is he going to be able to find the boss when he gets the quest? How hard is it going to be? Treasure, of course, you need a certain amount of loot and RPGs. Merchants, you need places for people to get rid of the loots. The shape of the level, you know, for RPGs, you know, you go from one extreme to these totally open worlds like Oblivion. And the other extreme are, you know, there's a lot of RPGs or shooters are an even more extreme example where they're linear, rail-like worlds, and they're only just a couple of rooms wide, and the whole game is you going through this big, long stream of rooms. You got to figure out what kind of shape of the level matches the type of gameplay you're looking for. You know, what we did in Titan Quest, and we did a similar thing to what World of Warcraft did a similar thing, was we created the world where we had these sort of medium-long ovals, and the whole world are these long ovals are kind of the levels, and they're all connected. They're wide enough so that you still had the feeling that it was an open world and you can explore and find things and clear out levels. But they weren't so open that you lost the story. You know, it's hard to tell a story in a wide open world. It's easier in a more linear world. First-person shooters and RTSs on the right, they have different gameplay constraints on how you build your level. Performance is another huge aspect in creating levels, especially on the console side, because you can't change the minimum specs at the last minute. You're stuck with whatever the console is. So you constantly have to be worrying about, do I have too many polys or vertices or textures or objects? You know, is the pathing too complex? The AI? All these things matter. And generally, the more things you put in a level, the slower things go. So you constantly have to worry about this. You need to know whether your memory, CPU, or GPU limited, because that determines what things you have to watch out for. And the best way to do this is you need a lot of tools. The programmers, if you work with the programmers, they can provide you a lot of tools to help figure out where the performance problems are. And the thing I really want to say here is performance is not only the programmer's job. Performance is, amazingly, just about everybody on the team has something that affects performance. But certainly level designers are, it's one of the most important things they do. Testing, there's two types of testing. There's testing for bugs. And with respect to level designers, there's lots of bugs. There's cracks in the world. There's places where people get stuck. There's lots of things that break the pathing in the game. So there's lots of bugs like that. You have to do that kind of testing. The publisher does a lot of that testing too. But you have to continually debug your levels and fix the bugs. Testing for fun is vitally important too. When you first hack out a level, it's just not going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of problems with it. Some of the big places that cause problems are people get lost. That's very common in virtual worlds because they don't have any kind of orientation once they're moving around. And So you have to watch a lot of focus testing and play the levels and watch other people test and see where there's problems where people get lost. Other problems are people can't find things. They can't find the NPC that's going to give them the quest. They can't find the quest objective. Certainly, I have a lot of trouble in World of Warcraft finding quest objectives. I usually have to go online and look up half of them to figure out where I'm supposed to go to find the solution to the quest. You know, but you don't necessarily want to force people to go on the internet to find out what they have to do next. You want to create the game and create the levels in a way where they're naturally and subconsciously guided to where they're supposed to go. You know, they think they're a great adventurer, but you're really just channeling them right where you want to go. Data logging, you know, what you want to do is work with the gameplay designers are going to do a lot of this too, but you want to work with the programmers to create data logging so when people are playing the game, we're keeping track of what is the frame rate, what is the maximum frame rate for the level, where was that maximum frame rate, how long did it take them to solve this quest, how long were they questing in a level. If most people were spending 4 hours in a level that you designed for them to spend 2 hours for, there's probably something wrong there. They're probably getting lost or they can't find something, and you've got to figure out what that is and fix your level. So testing is, you can't create a great game a level with respect to gameplay without a lot of testing. And you have to use the test results and keep iterating to make it better. This is just, you know, at Ensemble Studios, we had everybody play, once the game was playable, everybody in the company had to play the game every week, and we actually scheduled times for people to play. We would have a designer who would be looking over their shoulder, taking notes as they're playing the game to figure out what's working, what's not working. There'd be a little post-mortem after every play session from all the people participating. And I thought that was really important for creating a fun, great game. And it was also really important that everybody played the game regularly so that everybody working on the game knew what the game was and where you were trying to go with the game. It helped inform them in all their little decisions they're making every day, whether they're a programmer, an artist, or a music guy, or whatever, to make the right decision, to keep everybody on the same page. A large part of what designers do is they have to evangelize and inform everybody on the team of what the game is all the time. This helps a lot. So we don't have time to do this. I was going to go through an example and make an interactive session where I was going to get a lot of information and go through a kind of virtual creation of what you would have to do to create a valley with a few farms. And I think you'd find a lot of very interesting things with that. You know, some small things, you know, a lot of these things come down to research. There's cheating. You know, when you create a farm in ancient Greece, does it have stone walls, mud bricks? Is it got stucco? Is it made out of wood? Does it have a thatch roof, a tile roof? You know, somebody's got to figure all this out. Somebody's got to find examples of this. Give this information to the artists. You know, were the roads in the countryside paved? If so, what were they paved with? You know, there's a lot of this kind of information. The artist might come back and say, I can only make you 20 feet of stone walls. Stone walls take a lot of time to create, only 20 feet. So you're going to put this 20-foot chunk of stone wall all over your level? It'll look very artificial and gamey. So you kind of cheat. You work with the designers, you work with the programmers and the artists, and you create a modular system where you create 5 4-foot-long walls that stick snap together. And that way you can create walls that have, you know, the A, B, C, A, D, D, A, you know, you can mix it up and create more unique walls. But it takes a lot of collaboration, a lot of work to work with the tech people and the artists to make that all happen. So I'm sorry we didn't get to do this. This was actually supposed to be the core of what was going on here. But and this is the best I can come up with finding a farm in some game. So, you know, in this, one of the things is, so the fields, you know, what kind of crops are in the fields? You know, do you want to just paint rows of lines like that on a flat surface? We decided that didn't work. So we actually created a whole new kind of technology where we created these little furrows in the mesh for the farmland. And since the mesh is made out of triangles, we can only create the furrows in 3 different directions. But it really made the farmland a lot more compelling. So quickly, how to get this job, be multidisciplinary. I think this is the one job that requires the most multidisciplinary part of game development. You really have to know about just about every element of what's going on in game development because you're bringing it all together. You're interacting with everybody else in the team to make it happen. So be multidisciplinary. You should be familiar with multiple game editors. You know, you don't know what editor you're going to use when you get out of here. And whatever editor you use, you want to know about all the other editors so you can think of ways of making that editor better. And the most important thing for getting any kind of game job, I think, is make great mods. If you're right out of college, but you can show them a portfolio of 3 or 4 incredible mods or levels you've created on some existing editors, that's the best way to get a job in this industry right out of college, no matter, especially for any kind of design job, but especially for level design. So I would spend, and it takes a lot of time. I give this advice to a lot of people, but almost everybody's too lazy or too busy to ever create anything. That's why the few people who do create some really good-looking levels, it's relatively easy to get a job. Okay, so that's it. I don't know if we have any time for questions, but...
Maybe one question, one or two?
Yep. So just how much level can you get out in that command?
Well, levels don't quite work that way.
I mean, when you were hiring people...
Oh, you
said some of them look amazing.
If you look at the Titan Quest editor, you can create a... You know, 500 meter by 500 meter, nice little scene.
You so can. One money shot.
Yes, one money shot. That's pretty much exactly it. Not every editor.
How close does it look to the money shots you showed?
That's hard to say. It looks amazingly like production quality, although the real production levels have a lot more details that do set them apart. But it's using our editor, you can create some really incredible production quality looking stuff very quickly. You know, one of the things we were trying to do with our game was similar to what Neverwinter Nights was trying to do. We wanted to create a game where somebody could use the editor and create, 5 or 6 hours of gameplay during the week, and then have their buddies over the weekend, and they can all go play the level that they created that week. And I think we came pretty close to creating that. You know, you could, with some familiarity with the editor, create 5 or 6 hours of gameplay in 6 or 7 hours. It probably isn't quite to the level that the production stuff we did is, but it's certainly good enough for weekend playing.